All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 278 for Thursday. Sometime on the timeline. I don't actually know what today's date is. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out just how rigged the game is, and reminding the internet that
hands or a cunt. Hands or a cunt. Hands or a cunt.
I'm Morps, and tonight we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Kentucky Peach Barrel Ale, and I feel as though it should have hydrogen in it, simply because I'm eating Japanese food as well.
And we have the BSV. BSV, what are you drinking?
Sadly, nothing.
And I'm about to finish off my third shot of... what is this stuff? Devil's Cut. So... anyways, oh, and the IRC, they are telling me that it might be September. So,
are you sure?
No, but if you're a time traveler and you're hoping for a, you know, for a guide or a bearing, you probably want to go somewhere else.
Could be August or forever after.
Yeah, I heard a fun theory the other day that that's why the Federation and Star Trek changed their uniforms so damned often, is so that time travelers wouldn't have to ask what year it was. Like, that's a stretch just for them wanting to sell new action figures every couple of years, but, you know. So, anyways, let's see, I think I did throw the link in the IRC. So, the leading story tonight is, I'm using the Talos blog, although this is, of course, posted all over the place. The Talos Intelligence is, I believe it's Cisco. Let me double check. Now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah, it's Cisco. It's Cisco's security research team. They discovered that, of course, the blog goes into all the detail where they're checking certificates and showing that it's all real and that it was compromised. But pretty much CCleaner, specifically their update server, was compromised. And the update system for CCleaner was used to distribute malware. Both CCleaner and CCleaner Cloud were affected. Apparently, they've already replaced it with a clean version, but you still need to check and see if your machines are affected. If you have CCleaner in your images at work, you might want to, you know, break out the old malware scanner and get cracking, because, the fallback command and control scheme used by the CCBKDR includes generating a monthly domain name, which Talos has already registered all of them, request an A record for the domain, 16 bytes of the true destination IP are encoded in the first A record, 16 bytes are encoded in the second A record, true destination IP is then computed and connected to. To control the connections, Talos has created two IPs such that they can be fed into the application to resolve this to the sinkhole IP. So pretty much Talos has tried to register the domains and make sure that this botnet can't actually fire up, but there's been other articles, and Talos has a few other blogs on it. Pretty much, they think CCleaner servers have been compromised since like July.
Surprised that the domains were available to be registered if they've already stuck a botnet in place.
You don't register them early, because the moment somebody takes apart your bot and goes and checks and see who's registered them, they can start
to get back to you.
Yeah. No, you don't want to register them until almost right before the bot's going to start using them. That way you can only own them for the amount of time necessary. Although, with that Pirate Bay guy last week, we talked about it. See, this is the kind of stuff I was worried about when you have a domain registrar that literally will not give attribution, which is cool from a privacy standpoint, but if your activity is, you know, spreading malware, that's kind of shitty. I mean, so So this is technically a supply chain attack they get in. It looks like it was the Netya worm that was released in the wild early in 2017. Oh, wait, no, that's a reference they're using. I read this earlier today, but now I don't remember it because I've been drinking. So Sea Cleaner, I mean, anybody who doesn't know, Sea Cleaner is a very popular program for cleaning up temp files, internet cache files, registry entries. It's considered kind of the standard when it comes to just doing regular maintenance on a Windows machine, because it'll clear out... I mean, if you get a machine that somebody's been using for years and they've never cleaned up their temp files and they've never gone through and cleaned it out, you run CCleaner, you could get gigabytes of hard drive space.
Yeah, what do you know? I got three gigs back.
Are you running it now?
No, I'm not running it now. I have run it in the past. I'm kind of scared to now.
I was going to say.
That and Diskrite, I have two CDs for just popping in. I've got a Spinrite, and I've got Sea Cleaner from the last time I decided to try to do disk maintenance.
So, on Spinrite, it's an interesting program, and I know I used to be a little bit more format C. Yeah, I used to advocate Spinrite a little bit more than I do today. Don't run it on an SSD.
Does it not like SSDs?
You will destroy your SSD with that thing, because the way it works, I've learned a little bit more since then. It was a decade ago that I told you to start using that thing. What it's really doing is it goes through and flips the bits on your disk, you know, like 20, 30 times. And it's doing that, and it's trying to force reads and writes to these sectors on the disk. And what that ends up doing is... if it has a part of the disk that you're having a hard time reading, it can exercising the drive like that can sometimes get you a good read by repeatedly reading the same sector, you know, fail, 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 fail. Occasionally you might, you know, luck out and get a good read, and then it can go on to the next area. The other thing that it'll do is, because it's exercising the disk like that, modern hard drives use reserve blocks, so they can... go, oh, that block's gone bad. If the disk's firmware figures out that a block has gone bad, it'll switch it out with the reserve sector. So what that really means is that it starts using a different part of the disk for storing that particular sector of the disk, which I don't know if you actually follow what I'm on about, but basically the storage units on the disk are numbered, and it keeps a bunch in reserve. And if one of them stops working, it'll tell the disk firmware will say, okay, that sector's over here now, and use a good sector. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Don't use five. Five's broken, use six.
Yeah. Well, it's more like, oh, five's broken, go use 5,000. Because 5,000 isn't allocated to the disk for usual use. So And so the disk will do that, and so Spinrite can exercise the disk and get it going again. But pretty much if Spinrite has... you know, I told you your disk is damaged. After you get all your data off of it, you need to replace it. But do not run that on an SSD, because you will just it'll just destroy it. It'll just wear out the writing on an SSD is actually destructive. During normal use, you'd almost never notice it. But if you're like, I don't know, using like some kind of a cache drive or a scratch drive.
Hammering the shit out of it
with Spinrite, you'll eventually wear it out. So, and also SSDs try to do what's called wear leveling, which is a similar concept to the spinning disk, where it'll switch out sectors for known good ones. But instead of doing that, it moves them around all the time based on the number of times you've written to that sector to try to keep you from wearing it out really fast. And because like SD cards, you could do this, especially early SD cards, where if you sat there and wrote to the beginning of the disk over and over and over again, early USB drives too, you could eventually wear out the front of the disk. And you know, you still might have, it might be like a 512 meg SD card, and you know, only the first couple of sectors go bad, but it holds the you know, the drive geometry, so now the whole thing's bad, you know what I mean? And so modern discs are a little bit smarter about that, and can move things around on the disc as it wear out. So, but because of the way SpinRite will exercise that disc, if you run it on an SSD, you are shortening the lifespan of that SSD like nobody's business. So, anyways,
this became a troll tool.
Oh God! Yeah, you don't like somebody, and you know they have an SSD in their laptop. Just go run SpinRite on it. Oh.
We were talking about C cleanup.
Right. C cleaner. So, anyways, the short of it is that C cleaner servers, which Avast bought C cleaner, were prior form, I think, is the company that actually made C cleaner, and Avast bought them. At some point during the merger, apparently their server got pwned, and they've been hosting malware for a while, at least a month. So, and, you know, the Talos blog has some detail on it. They go into what the malware does. They pull up the changes on the disk. They figured out the command and control system. Of course, the impact is it's a botnet. And, you know, CCleaner claims to have over 2 billion downloads worldwide as of November 2016. So, you know, apparently you can
have... Pretty big botnet.
Good, fairly big botnet. You know, and they've apparently already cleaned it up and replaced it with a clean version. So if you get CCleaner now, you're probably okay. But, CCleaner gets, if you throw the CCleaner binary at a virus total, apparently ClamAV would pick it up as Win Trojan Floxif. I don't know where they get these names. Anyways, so they've got signatures out for AMP, CloudLock, CWS, Email Security, ThreatGrid, Umbrella, and I'm willing to bet, because this article is a couple of days old, all the other major AV vendors are probably got signatures for it by now. So, meh. But, you know, hey, if you've been running CCleaner, and you've got to be careful, especially with auto-updating systems. And, you know, of course, the Linux users in the crowd would be like, oh, our systems are great. We just have to get and get whatever, and we don't have to worry about third-party providers. Except if the Linux... If the package repos get pwned, as happened to Python 3, the PyPy repos had a whole bunch of typo squatting malware in them. So, yeah.
Whenever anyone can post the updates, I know the community tries to police itself, but technically, isn't it kind of always pwned?
No. It's and especially in the case of like Ubuntu repos or well, any Linux repos, I should say, you're going to need to get into one of the repo maintainers. And if you go adding third-party repos and you don't know if they're clean or not, you're in the same boat as, you know, the Windows guys who have auto-updating software. So it's hard to have a general fix or recommendation for this other than just know what your system does and know when it's acting weird. And that doesn't really matter what OS you're using or what software you're running. It's just, of course, this hadn't even triggered yet. It was still being distributed. So I don't know how you would have caught it short of just, I guess, every once in a while throwing everything you download at a virus scanner and hoping for the best. And as we know, all antivirus is in fact terrible. So
yeah, it only reports problems that it knows about.
That's true. And then you have the heuristics, but a lot of people turn the heuristic-based antiviruses off because they false positive so damned often. So, I don't know. Yeah, Cycros in the chat room is talking about running an IDS. Of course, again, you have the same problem of you need signatures in the IDS to tell you that something's bad. So, actually, what your better bet is in not so much an IDS, but simply watching what your network does on a regular basis. I've been playing with the DNS server Pi-hole, and that's really interesting. Going in there and just watching your DNS logs for a bit, you'll see some interesting things, and that would be an excellent way to notice bot activity. Or just, you know, watch what your systems are doing. Maybe occasionally watch the network and see if they're making weird connections.
Email server watching Netflix, guys.
Well, maybe Exchange really wanted to know what happened with Stranger Things. I don't know. I was just... anyways, Now, all you can really do is be vigilant, be careful, or, you know, cut off your internet and go live in a cave. You probably won't get a virus if you're not hooked up to the internet and living in a cave and not letting anybody else touch your systems.
It's going to make ordering automotive parts a bit more difficult.
It will make ordering things online a little bit more difficult, but it's either that or go into something like the iPhone system where they lock everything down and control it, and only get malware in the Play Store, in the App Store every once in a while, as opposed to. I mean, there's no perfect system here, guys. It's all about just paying attention and doing what you can. I mean, sure, you could go run some esoteric operating system. They're saying Plan 9 in the IRC. Yeah, good luck doing anything on a Plan 9 system on modern hardware. Because at some point they stopped writing it for hardware and just started saying run it in a VM.
I kind of want to find one of the old COBOL operating systems
now. Am I confusing my research operating systems? I might be thinking of a different one. I know Temple OS was written to run in a VM, but that's not a research operating system. That's the love child of a madman. So, and not madman is in the guy in the in the channel here. I mean, of an actual crazy person.
tomato, tomato.
Well, you know. So let's move on to news stories here, because this first one is just crazy. Static actually sent me, I think it may have been a different article, but it was the same news article, or same story. This is from, we're gonna read this one from The Verge. Earlier this month, hackers broke into Equifax servers and stole 143 million people's personal information, including social security numbers. In response to the attack, Equifax set up a website, Equifax Security 2017, for possible victims to verify whether or not they've been affected. Because the process involves sharing sensitive information, consumers have to trust they're entering their data in the right place, which can be tricky because the breach recovery site itself isn't actually part of Equifax.com. And that would be probably because I think it was probably set up by Mandiant or whoever they hired to do their cleanup or their marketing company. If the users end up on the wrong site, they could end up leaking data they've already, you know, concerned was stolen. Today, Equifax ended up creating that exact situation on Twitter. In a tweet to a potential victim, the credit bureau linked Security Equifax 2017 instead of Equifax Security 2017.
Oh, nice.
An easy mistake to make, but the result was the user was sent to a site with no connection to Equifax itself. They deleted the tweet shortly after the article, but it remained live for nearly 24 hours. And that was a phishing site. Equifax themselves sent their end users to a phishing site over their Twitter account.
Here, guys, you think you might have been compromised? Good news. Now you know you've been compromised. Here's our credit monitoring service.
Are they trying to see how badly they can fuck this up? I mean, they waited until a hurricane to even release that they'd been breached. They had their executive selling stock right before they announced it. I mean... And now,
that's normal. I don't know what you're talking about.
And on the breach site, if you signed up for their credit protection services, you had to agree to not sue them. And now they're sending you to the phishing sites directly through their Twitter account. There were apparently three more tweets that had sent potential victims to the same fake address, dating far back as September 9th. The tweets have also been deleted. Luckily, the alternate URL, Equifax 6 and Victim 2, isn't malicious. It was at first. They bought it. Full-stack developer Nick Sweeney set up the misspelling site in order to expose vulnerabilities that existed in Equifax response page. So he's saying he set it up as a trick, but I think that's because he got a hold of it. It was a phishing site for a while. Or at least people said it was a phishing site. So apparently Equifax put out a statement since I last looked at this article. Where is it? Misspelled link was unintentional. It demonstrates how easy it is to trick consumers. Here it is. Equifax spokesperson said all tweets from their account with the wrong URL have been deleted. All posts using the wrong link have been taken down. To confirm, the correct website is Equifax Security 2017, and we apologize for the confusion. I mean, could you do this more wrong? I mean,
I'd
how
like to point
they...
out the quote, this is how easy it is to trick end users. No, you're not tricking end users when you're the person that's supposed to tell them where to go and you tell them the wrong place to go. you're either wrong or you're lying. You're not tricking them.
So, I guess what I'm trying to understand, I mean, how are they not covered in government regulators and lawsuits and every other manner of everything you never want to happen to you as a business at this point?
Because they're not a bank.
Well, okay. But when I first started talking about the Equifax stuff last week, I didn't want to completely crucify them. Because as much as they've sucked setting up their systems, they still got hacked. I mean, it's somebody had to go take advantage of their systems, right? The fact that you know that this is going to happen if you set up a web server and you don't secure it notwithstanding, it's sort of like leaving your car unlocked, park under an overpass in the bad part of town. I mean, you kind of know what's going to happen. But, I mean, yeah, you would think, I mean, they'd be... I mean, how are there not government regulators like frothing at the bit to get in there and go nuts on these guys?
No, they are. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is sending people in. But regulators, they're kind of like calling the cops after you've been beaten, raped, and shot in both knees. They'll try to do something afterwards, and what that something might be is rape you and shoot you in both wrists. But...
God.
They're reactionary. They don't.
No, I understand that they're reactionary. I'm saying, why isn't the reaction happening to scare others?
Regulators are also confined by the laws that created the regulatory agency. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is attempting to step in, but they were created to monitor banks and things that, quote, fall under their definition of a financial institution. And credit reporting and monitoring wasn't a financial institution, even though it's used in financing. They were defining financial institutions as things that loaned and directly dealt with money. Equifax, despite it being used to get you money, never touches cash. Never hand you cash. So there wasn't a regulator set up regulated. And now one of the regulators that exists is attempting to step in, claiming that enough banks use it that it should fall under consumer finance. That's no, every bank uses it.
It's not so much that I want to see them, you know, I don't want to see regulators going nuts. It's more I kind of want to see them hurt as an example to others to go fix their shit.
Oh yeah, I'm not sure regulators are the answer. I think a huge fine.
I think their stock price should have tanked more than it did. It's already recovered. I think their business partner should have dropped them. Because if that's how they're treating their commodity information, because their customers are not you and me. We are their commodity. Their customers are other banks. And if that's how they treat their commodity information, imagine the other shit they're doing. Because we also did the article about having the admin password. I mean, all the shit's going to come out. But it's just like, this is... The fact that all this is happening, and whereas it's their name is getting dragged through the mud, their stock price isn't really tanking, they've had two executives, one retired and the other decided to pursue other interests. Yeah, bullshit. But they were both technology executives. They didn't, you know, the CEO and the CFO aren't going to take any hits from this. And even if you did find the shit out of them, they'd just lay a bunch of people off. I mean, they wouldn't, or just raise their pricing on people. I mean, it's not like they'd actually take a hit. So I guess that's the problem, is that because they're not, there's no actual... long-term damage being inflicted on them, so I can't point to them and say, look, you don't want to be like Equifax, do you? Because then, you know, some asshole manager's going to go, well, their stock price hasn't changed. So.
Maybe you have to pay everyone whose data has been breached $3,000?
I think $3,000 might be low, but I'm just...
You could liquidate the company.
Well,
I mean, how punitive do you want to get? Because you got to think, you're also putting people out of work when you do this.
I know, and that's why it's a hard thing to figure out, because it's like, yeah, it's not some accountant's fault. It's probably not even the IT grunt's fault. It's probably some executive somewhere who's like, I don't care, get it done now. you don't have but 15 minutes and no budget, and we're not going to do a security audit. Or we're just going to pay the auditors off. We're not going to actually have a real one done. You know, they took every shortcut. They've not taken it seriously, and now they're hosed. So, no, I haven't seen other companies do this. No. So,
I do like the IRS and information service. Yes, they are.
Yeah. Speaking of information services, let's go on to the next article here. Should have pasted this in earlier, but I also am light on news stories tonight, so we're just, you know, kind of stretching for time. Next one is from Sky News. WhatsApp has rejected government requests to access encrypted messages. Encryption services are... I don't need the sub-headline. Here it is. The UK government demanded that WhatsApp come up with a way to offer access to encrypted messages this summer, Sky News has learned, a request that was rejected by the instant messaging service. The inability to access terrorists' encrypted conversations is creating a black hole for security services, according to a security source. Terrorists are frequent users of encrypted apps, specifically WhatsApp and Telegram, the source said. It's crucially important that we can access their communications, and when we can't, it can provide a black hole for investigators, the source added. I don't have the dramatic sound loaded up. I already read that. At the United Nations discussion on Wednesday, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, will ask technology companies to do more to help the governments fight terrorism in the wake of the explosion at Parsons Green Tube Station. Encrypted messaging apps were used ahead of the attacks on Westminster, Manchester, and London Bridge. Well, that doesn't mean anything. Somebody used the apps before the attack? Really? I mean, seriously.
Somebody made a phone call before this happened.
I mean, that's the most bullshit excuse I've ever heard. Well, these things were used. Yeah, they're huge. Thousands of people are using them once every minute. Okay, here we go. The devices of one of the Parsons Green suspects has been recovered, and they are being investigated by intelligence agencies. Apps such as WhatsApp, Telegram, and Apple iMessage employ Apple iMessage, you know, the one that comes on the phone by default, employ end-to-end encryption. Messages sent to users are scrambled by code contained on the app or on the phone or the phone itself. Systems are designed so that tech companies themselves do not have access to the content of the message. You notice something they never actually said in this article here?
That when you log into the phone, you can see the messages that are on the phone.
Well, you could do that. But, I mean, they never actually say that we know that the terrorists were using WhatsApp. Like, they didn't say we recovered a phone from one of the suspects and it had WhatsApp on it. Dun, dun, dun. No. They just said they recovered a phone. And they said the encrypted apps were used. There's no actual linkage here. The article's bullshit, and they're using that to talk about it. I mean, seriously, there's no real linkage. They're just kind of talking about WhatsApp and then talking about terrorists and kind of, well, it's in the same article, so they must be related. I mean, come on, assholes. Yeah. Sky News understands that WhatsApp cooperates with law enforcement to provide metadata. It does hold the name of an account when it was created, the last date seen, the IP address, and the associated email address. WhatsApp says it appreciates the work that law enforcement agencies do to keep people safe around the world. We are prepared to carefully review, validate, and respond to law enforcement requests based on applicable law and policy. But the company argues it cannot provide data that WhatsApp itself does not collect in the first place, including the contents of a message. So it's like, we don't have it. We can't give it to you. In a statement on its website, the company writes, naturally, people have asked what end-to-end encryption means for work of law enforcement. WhatsApp appreciates the work that law enforcement agencies do to keep people safe around the world. We carefully review, validate, and respond to law enforcement requests based on applicable law and policy. We prioritize responses to emergency requests. Rafael Patucci, director of security at the Royal United Services Institute, told Sky News, the way you have to think is that the terrorist groups use these sort of applications the same way that all of us use encrypted applications, which is to plan our lives. So what you're increasingly seeing is that individuals are forming relationships or advancing relationships using these online communication methods. And they're using this to direct plots! Plots, I say! God! It's I love this 0 to 60. It's like, yeah, well, you know, everybody uses them, so they're using it for terrorism. It's just like, oh my God, people.
Well, I want to point out, he is right. Terrorists will use tools for terrorism. That's what makes them terrorists.
So when are we banning cars? Because they keep, or trucks, they keep running trucks of priests into crowds. So when are we banning trucks?
Here fairly soon, but they're going to move to smart cars because they can get through those bollards. Now, the downside is, after 4 or 5 fat chicks, the smart car's going to stall out. You can't get as many people.
Well, that and the horn's just not nearly as impressive, you know? Meep, meep. Yeah, and they're using this to direct plots. We've had some instances where you have individuals based in Raqqa who are steering people to launch terrorist attacks from a distance and are communicating with them blow by blow using these encrypted communications. It's called SMS messaging, dude. I just... Guy News understands that 90% of investigations into terrorism and serious crime are now impacted by encryption. Terrorists themselves are now far more cyber savvy than they have been before. You know, they bought a new phone. Security sources told Sky News at the meeting this summer, British officials asked WhatsApp to come up with technical solutions to allow them to access the content of messages. So basically, the British government's telling WhatsApp, you have to build us a backdoor. Cybersecurity experts say that creating a backdoor for government could weaken encryption for everyone, as it would be a prime target for hackers. The UK intelligence officials believe a compromise could be possible, pointing out that cybersecurity isn't binary. It's not a
it's secure or not secure. Isn't that binary?
Well, security is kind of more of a feeling, but and that services offer different levels of cybersecurity to deal with different levels of threats. Bullshit. Anyway. UK government remains firm in its aspiration to obtain the unencrypted content of messages under a proper warrant. Well, at least they want to use a warrant. The problem of obtaining access to contents of communications is larger than that of one company. Telegram remains popular for dissemination of jihadist materials. Sky News observes channels, including Al-Qaeda's official mouthpiece and Abu Qatada, the radical cleric deported to Jordan, pumping out propaganda. Recruiters pump out content to lure the curious and can inspire attacks, or they can go one further and use the same app to direct attacks the continent away. Telegram told Sky News that it is a dedicated channel to remove terrorist accounts, explaining as a result, jihadi channels usually go down within a few hours long before they can reach any traction. Earlier this year, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Microsoft, along with other tech companies, announced they would form the Global Internet Forum to counter terrorism in an attempt to tackle extremism on their own platforms. So, you know, I get it. You do want to monitor what's going on networks in case somebody is, you know, a bad actor or they're talking about hurting people. I mean, I get that. But, you know, encryption, you know, the guy says, oh, you can have multiple layers of it. Except encryption doesn't. It's either broken or it's not. It is binary. Something is encrypted and secure or it's not. And if it's not, you have no control or no guarantee of control over what happens with that content. Encryption is usually a two-party system. The way Microsoft gets around that in some of their Windows systems is the actual encryption key is a certificate, and then you get your own copy of that key encrypted with your certificate so that you can give other accounts permissions and stuff like that, and these certificates are stored in Active Directory, but that's neither here nor there. It still comes back to that original key, and if you break that original key, the file is no longer encrypted. Or at least you can make a clear text copy of it. So for WhatsApp or any encrypted messaging platform to provide the government what they're asking for, they would have to completely re-engineer the way their application works, because they're likely doing end-to-end encryption where the app will negotiate an encryption key, probably a one-time key, between it and the copy of the app it's communicating with on another device. And all that anybody else can see is noise, assuming the encryption's good. So, you know, it's encrypted or it isn't. If the encryption's broken, it's not encrypted. You know, when you see people using Base64 to secure messages across the internet, that's not secure. That's not encrypted. You can reverse that. It's fairly simple. It's fairly trivial, actually. But people still do it, thinking it's secure. And So for WhatsApp to provide the government with what they would want, they would have to go from being a decentralized point-to-point messaging platform, which is what Skype used to be, by the way, to being a centralized messaging platform where everything goes through their services, back up to a server, gets cataloged for government inspection, and then sent on. Now, you could do encryption from the app to the server and then from the server to the second copy of the app that you're communicating with, but can't... You now have this midpoint that could be intercepted. And a lot of people think this is what Microsoft did with Skype, because they re-engineered how Skype worked a few years ago, and as opposed to being point-to-point, now it all connects up to Microsoft servers. And they likely did that to comply with wiretap laws. But I'm not certain how I feel about a government telling a company, no, you have to re-engineer your product so that we can see what's going on in there. And encryption, as they're pointing out in the IRC, Cycro specifically is pointing out in the IRC, it's math, it's a formula, and these formulas are published. You can't outlaw it. I mean, well, I suppose you can, but good luck. They tried. It's like when they tried to outlaw the decryption key for DVDs. I mean, it's a string of numbers. I mean, it's a number. How do you outlaw a number? You can't copyright a number. So even if you try to force these big messaging company apps, or these big messaging companies and apps give you a back door, well, okay, what do you do when the people you don't like, terrorist or otherwise, go grab a Python script that's open source, or Matrix, or any of the other open source products out there that give you a communication platform, and set up their own? It's still encrypted and you still can't break it.
On this argument, they're not actually going after... They're not going after big players. So they're not going after ISIS with this legislation. They're not trying to take down what's left of Al-Qaeda or Boko Haram. They're targeting Bob in Queens that decided to hop on a jihadi website once and now is using WhatsApp to talk to someone and get ideas on what to do. That's all this would really deal with. And the downside on that is, catch Bob in wherever I said Bob was, you're going to have to be listening to everyone. And that much noise, I'm not sure you'll be able to find the
Well, you know, and that's a good point, because the NSA has been monitoring our communication for years, and yet we still have had shootings, attacks, the nightclub, the gay nightclub that got shut up, the Sarnia brothers, the Boston Marathon bombing. I mean, if monitoring everyone's communications worked, wouldn't we have prevented all that stuff?
No, you see, they just need to monitor the more. The more they monitor, the safer you are.
I don't hate to say it. I hate people get offended by people saying this. You need to, if you're really wanting to combat terrorism, you look at who the terrorists are, and then you don't let them in your country. And by who the terrorists are, I mean what group of people are committing terrorist acts.
So let's just be blunt. You're talking about Muslims.
This instance, yes, but it hasn't always been so. That's why I said terrorists. During the Troubles, I would have been profiled in Britain. I'm a Catholic dude with Irish ancestry. They were attacking Britain. So, British authorities, they didn't look at Habib Hansard has not been laid. They looked at Joseph O'Malley, who's wearing a crucifix. Because that dude's going to leave a bomb somewhere. And leave. Because when Catholics go crazy, we don't blow ourselves up. That limits the number of people we can blow up. So, yeah, you look at the group, and right now, it is Islam. So you would be looking at Muslims from specific countries. So you're not even hitting all Muslims. You don't hear a lot of Indian Muslims blowing themselves up or committing terrorist attacks.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But yeah, if you want to combat terrorism, you go after the terrorists. Tools aren't always the answer. They'll find other tools.
So, and you're right, though. You have to compromise the security of everyone. And that's the thing I don't like. Because... Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, yeah.
I was going to say, if you have to monitor everything I do, because you're monitoring everything everyone does, and I'm not doing anything illegal, but what if I'm doing something distasteful? Say, an underground internet radio station. Well, it's not illegal. At least I don't think it's illegal.
Wiping off to well porn. That's fucking distasteful. Wiping off to better porn.
Well, okay, you've got a better example than me. We're going to go with your example. So Madman's whacking off to whale porn. And...
No, I said you were whacking off to well porn. I have decent porn. We're using my example. We're using my example. Corpse is whacking off to whale porn. I have decent shit.
And this could go so much worse.
Yes, it really could. Goodness, we're being nice right now.
But in the government's argument, I could see the argument of certain things we'll concede need to be encrypted. Like whenever you're doing financial transactions, I'll always fall back to that because I don't think anyone needs to know about my money. But when you're messaging your friends to go out to dinner, maybe we should be able to read that. I mean, we won't without a warrant, but why does that need to be encrypted, guys?
Well, and that's the real thing. I mean, how do you enforce a warrant if you're monitoring everybody? So, I mean, because I agree with you. If you have a warrant, fair ball. Because that means you've at least gotten a judge to sign off that there's probably something going on here. But, I don't know. I just, this whole you have to build a backdoor system in for us, just, it strikes me as authoritarian. It strikes me as anti-liberty. And it's really easy to go back to the Ben Franklin quote, you know, if you trade freedom for security, you don't get either one of them. So,
one thing they're trying to move back to is... We don't really realize this because we live in a modern era and it's not the case anymore. A lot of times, you didn't know when you had a surveillance warrant placed on you. The warrant was served to AT&T. Your phone was then tapped. And they listened to all of your conversations, decided whether or not you were criminal, and if you weren't, the records were supposedly destroyed, and I believe most of them probably were. If you were a criminal, gas kicked in your door and drug you off at gunpoint.
I figure most of the monitoring at this point is not really trying to stop terrorism or attacks, because like I said, if that shit worked, the NSA would have caught a lot of the stuff that's happened in our country since. No, I think it's so that they can blackmail politicians, truthfully. So. But we know you were talking to they talk about having tapes of Trump talking to Russian diplomats before he was elected, so it's like, fuck, you know.
Yeah, but if that worked, Anthony Weiner would have gone away.
He largely has, hasn't he?
Carlos Danger?
Carlos Danger?
Not really, and they have pictures of him trying to fuck a 14-year-old.
Anyways, let's move on here, because this next one's funny, and we're kind of in that area. Admin from Hell, this is from the Naked Security blog from Sophos.com. Admin from Hell holds company ransom with a porn makeover.
Oh, yes.
You might not be aware of a porn site titled TeenSexualOrganBodyPart.com. You... I love the substitutions. Oh, you most certainly don't want to discover that when you type in your company's URL and get redirected to TeenSexualOrientationBodyPart.com, that all thanks to refusing to pay a $10,000 ransom to an IT admin contractor from hell. The IT admin is Travis So, a 40-year-old Arizona man who's confessed to lying to a client company in Phoenix, telling them he did not have the login information for their account with the registrar GoDaddy, likely the registrar, the domain name or hosting. So it had renewed the company's GoDaddy account in 2011. In May 2015, the company wanted to update its contact details with the domain registrar. Can't help, so said, I don't have the login anymore. He did have the login. He just didn't want to give it to them. Instead of changing the contact information in the GoDaddy account so he could defraud the company, so said in the plea deal. Instead, changing the contact information in the GoDaddy account so he could defraud the company, so said in the plea deal. He then went ahead and set up his own account with Microsoft to take over the company's domain. And this all happened between May and June of 2015. By tweaking the account, So made it so that the company's employees could not use their email accounts at first. He redirected the company's homepage to a blank page. Then he offered to make it all better in exchange for a cool $10,000 for returning everything to normal. No dice, said the company. After the company refused to pay the ransom, So redirected the company's homepage to the porn site. Visitors to the company's website were redirected for several days, during which they found themselves looking at teen something-somethings before the company's homepage returned to normal. According to a release from the Arizona U.S. Attorney's Office, So was sentenced on Monday to 4 years of probation and an order to pay $9,145 in restitution after having pleaded guilty to one count of wire fraud. Is that really wire fraud? I mean, he pleaded to it, so I guess, but... And just how did this young IT admin from hell escape jail time? According to the... he's 40... sentencing mandatorium posted courtesy of Ars Technica. The assistant U.S. attorney Matthew Binford said of the crime committed by So when he was 39, apparently out of character, a one-time lapse. Given the fact that this appears to be a one-time lapse in judgment, a term of probation is probably the best way to address the seriousness of this offense, while affording adequate deference to future criminal conduct and protecting the public from future crimes. So, yeah, what they're basically saying is have an instant, InSophos goes in and says, have an instant handling plan and make sure that your own employees control your domains. So, and maybe check where they're going every once in a while.
So, did they not pay the guy? That was the beef was?
I guess. He originally set it up for them in 2015. I guess he was a contractor. And when they wanted access to it, he wanted $10,000. And when they said no... that's when he started fucking around with it.
Oh, that's fucked up.
They should have gotten the login information from him the first time around. The fact that they didn't is just sad.
Something else is kind of weird. If you copy and paste their porn site URL, one of the suggestions is Dr. Mom's Guide to Sexuality.
Pretty sure that's not it. We could all day guess at the porn site they meant. I just enjoyed the way Sophos was blurring that out.
Yeah, but I just enjoyed putting the blur into a Google and hitting
see
search.
What you get. But yeah, so if you use a contractor, make sure you get off the admin accounts when they're done, because they just called them up,
changed them.
You know, yeah, 5 years later, and they're like, "Yeah, we need that account." And he's like, "Yeah, sure, $10,000." It's like, damn.
I kind of think of part of the contract would be, you're setting this up, now give me the shit when you're done, here's your money.
Yeah, wouldn't
or,
that be part
here's
of
your
the
money,
deliverable
give me your
report?
Shit.
wouldn't access to your accounts be part of the deliverable? Although, if they don't have any internal IT people, if it was like, hey, build us a website, I guess they may not have known.
Yeah, so. I didn't know I needed a password and an ID to log into this shit.
I don't know, dude. It's like, damn. I mean, granted, you occasionally hear about the ad. They have the article every once in a while. Of course, that's like every admin's dream is taking care of the people who, fucked him over by going in and screwing up their stuff. Most admins won't ever actually do it. One, because, you might go to jail and get sued and all that fun shit. But two, just because, most admins don't actually want to tear things down. They enjoy building. And destroying is just not really in the nature of the most people who do it. So it's kind of rare to see it actually happen, but it is kind of funny. So,
oh yeah, it's kind of hilarious. The dude was a douche, though. I was kind of hoping it would have been a righteous ad man that said, they didn't pay me. This dude got paid. He just forgot to include the password and shit for the website when he turned in his work.
Maybe he did and they just lost it.
That's a possibility.
You know, we're kind of assuming he's a douche here, but...
he proved he was a douche.
Yeah.
If he would have left the site alone and just said, I don't have it, I'm sorry, that's fine. When he decided to start messing with the site, proactively breaking it, that proved he was a douche.
Yeah, that's kind of shitty. I don't know, BSV, would you, if you were at work and you had the admin passwords, would you have fun with them like that?
No. I'm just slightly confused that just on a side thing with the... So, did he demand the $10,000 ransom with his regular name?
Oh yeah, they called him because I guess they called him up because the article read like he was the contractor who originally set it up, like, you know, 5 years prior, right?
Oh yeah, well I know that, and then he decided to start messing with it. But
yeah,
you'd think if you said no, I don't have this password, and then start messing with stuff, wouldn't you? I don't know. Not tell them it's exactly you messing with them.
Well, not if you're trying to extort money out of them.
Yeah, but there's plenty of way to extort money without giving your real identity.
Yeah, but that involves malware and, you know, bitcoins and encrypting people's files and.
I like Don't Ask statement as far as the mindset of admins. Breaking shit is easy. Making shit work is hard and thus more fun.
That's a good way to put it. That's true. Yeah, I could agree with that.
Because I can break anything Morps puts together. I can't put the shit Morps puts together.
Well, you see, a sledgehammer breaks a lot of stuff.
That's true.
I was going to go with the charcoal lighter and a Zippo, because fire is fun. But yes, sledgehammer works too.
Hey, Madman, where are the servers? I don't know. You want a hot dog?
I don't want a hot dog cooked up one of those.
This one tastes like, kind of rubbery.
It's got this weird burning plastic and metal smell taste to it. I don't know.
It tastes like Excel files and burnt plastic.
It's like, what are all these heavy metal flavors I'm getting here? It's like, that's your processor. What?
It's good for you. It's got minerals in it.
It's got minerals in it. Speaking of things that have minerals in it, do the last article here today. I think I've already thrown the link in. I have. It's from marketingland.com, which is everyone's favorite fucking website. I love going to these advertiser blogs and just seeing how incredulous they are.
Who comes up with these names?
People who sell ads.
Oh, no. BuyThisFuckingShit.com has got to exist now.
Facebook is making it easier for brands to retarget people with ads on Facebook based on how these people come into contact with the brand in the real world. Last month, it was reported that Facebook was testing a new way for advertisers to target ads at people who had visited their brick-and-mortar locations. Now, the social network is officially rolling out that option, along with the ability to retarget people based on their other offline events that Facebook can track, such as in-store product purchases and calls to a business office or call center. Facebook is taking tools that it had previously introduced for brands to measure ad-driven offline events and applying them in reverse. The new offline to online retargeting options are being added to Facebook custom audience ad targeting portfolio, which originated as a way for businesses to take information they collect outside of Facebook and apply it to ads bought on Facebook. Initially, that meant advertisers could upload the email addresses of people who subscribe to a business newsletter or to phone numbers of loyalty program members, and Facebook would match that information to people's profiles. But increasingly, Facebook has been expanding the program to cover various ways people may interact with the business, such as by RSVPing into a business's Facebook event, as well as targeting people who cross Instagram and its audience network ad network of third-party websites and apps. In addition to retargeting people, brands use custom audiences to target so-called look-alike audiences of people who share similar characteristics to those people listed in a custom audience, as well as exclude members of a custom audience from being shown an ad. So, And brands will be able to create custom audience lists of anyone that Facebook has tracked as having visited a brand's location, such as a retail store, restaurant, auto dealership within the past 30 days. To compile a custom audience of people who have visited a brand store, Facebook rely on people who have enabled the company to track their location through the mobile app settings. All this shit comes back to the mobile app. Facebook is literally tracking you everywhere you go so they can sell your information to advertisers. We've known this, but now they're getting down to what stores you go into. I mean, don't install the Facebook app, people, or if you do, disable it when you're not using it. Good God. We knew this was going on, but I mean, you just here it is, and they're bragging about it.
Of course. This is going to get their market share up a few points. Their stock price is going up now.
Yeah. Yeah.
For some reason, I just see the sentence, how to better serve man.
I mean, as big as Facebook is getting, I'm just waiting for them to lobby the government to make it illegal not to have a Facebook profile. Like, oh no, you have to opt out of being tracked where you go. Yeah, you need to wear this special armband if you're going to opt out of the Facebook. And we have a camp for you right here.
I do like the Twilight Zone references. I want you to know it did not go unmissed.
Yeah, thoughts?
Just in case you didn't know. If you call a 1-800 number, your phone is also being sold to telemarketers.
Well, of course it is. Everyone's selling everything. So.
Yes, Facebook is a bunch of assholes.
Yeah, that. I mean, it's like, seriously? I don't necessarily want Facebook to know every store I walk into. So, and I recently set up a new phone, and I've noticed I turned that shit off real fast. But it's like, you know, you're playing with a new phone, and you look on your alerts, and Google says, "I see you're in Buffalo Wild Wings. Would you like to write a review?" It's like, what the fuck? Off. Turn that shit off. My God.
Google's getting pissed off at me, dude. So since I broke my new phone and went back to my old phone, I had changed my password for my email, and I haven't keyed it into my old phone again, so every time I try to make a call, Google wants me to log in first. Every time I try to get directions using the GPS, Google wants me to log in first. I just minimize or exit out of that screen and go back to what I'm doing. But before it lets me do anything, it asks, "Do you want to sign into Google?" and takes over the entire fucking screen.
Damn.
Yeah. It makes almost the few voice things that I use on that phone, they're almost unusable because it won't take my voice until I minimize that. And after I minimize it, the program's already stopped listening for my voice. So I have to re-ask it something again.
And then the message pops back up.
No, it only pops up once per application. But it's still fucking retarded.
So, anyways, let's do this. Yo! Hadouken! All right, so I've only got one thing for Digital Dojo tonight, and it is an interesting-looking Raspberry Pi project. It's hosted on GitHub. It's called Keybox. And the idea is that you're going to hook a small TFT display, probably off Adafruit, up to a Raspberry Pi Zero and use it to store SSH keys. It runs an SSH agent as well. It can emulate a USB keyboard. So if you wanted to store complex passwords and be able to punch them into a machine on, say, you can encrypt a hard drive on boot, or you know, maybe you're using it as just a password vault. But anyways, it's pretty alpha. It's still pretty raw because it's pretty much instructions on how to build it on top of a basic Raspberry Pi, and they expect you to kind of solder the screen on it. But it's a neat project, and I like the concept of a small device with no Because, you know, they're saying, were they saying a Raspberry Pi W? No, just a zero. So, yeah, you know, a device that has no network connectivity and using it to store your keys. So I like the concept, and I may explore some more. It's got he's got some custom software in there. He's got a you know, he's talking about different cases to do, and he's hoping somebody's going to design a 3D case for it at some point, or 3D printed case for it at some point. So yeah, I just think it's interesting, and I like the idea.
What's the big advantage of storing those on a Raspberry Pi rather than, I don't know, a flash drive?
Well, on a flash drive, they're regular files, so they could get copied off. With a Raspberry, that's pretending to be a keyboard. There's not really direct, you know, network level or file system level communication between.
It's just sending the signals the keyboard would have you type in the password.
Yeah. Anyways, I like the concept. I may do some work with it later, but I thought I would throw this out there. And I mean, you know, if nothing else, it's offline. So if you're, you know, if your passwords are literally not accessible, you know, outside of the physical device, it's more like a key, like a car key. Actually, is a good example. So like, Madman, I couldn't steal your car. Well, assuming the lock on your car is perfect, I couldn't steal your car unless I broke into your house and stole your car keys, which gives you the opportunity to shoot me, correct?
Yes.
So, if you can treat your passwords in the same manner, why wouldn't you? Now, obviously, hotwiring cars is a thing, getting around passwords is a thing, so we're, you know, we don't live in a perfect world, but, you know.
That's at least an upgrade to the whole having it written down somewhere hidden in the house.
Well, sure, I mean, if you're gonna...
what?
Can't you write it down in the notebook labeled passwords? I mean, you know.
No, you use a cipher in how you write stuff down.
What? Yeah. Old family recipes.
Or just have random passwords in the book that are completely useless, labeled for common stuff. And just know which ones are actually correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one way to do it.
Oh God, don't log in drinking BSV. You're gonna lock yourself out. Is it the blue ink or the red ink that's good? Damn it!
No, but... no, everything's in green. I don't understand.
Or you have to see, is it the team password written down on page 1, 5, 10, 20, or 30?
That could be really fun if you forget which one's which. So. Anyways. So that's all I've really got for tonight. BSV! Closing thoughts.
I need alcohol.
All right. Madman, closing thoughts.
Is a closet too small a space to lock a cat up for a day?
I don't know.
Really,
is it a walk-in closet?
More of a question.
Is it a walk-in closet?
Into it. I think I'll just probably lock him in my room.
I like Don't Ask's idea. Tattoo the password on your groin. Well, if they get it, they better be willing to go all the way.
Oh, yeah, you'll have to lick that sucker because I'm going to have it tattooed on there hard. You won't read it otherwise.
I don't know. I don't want to come across somebody who's willing to remove said password to.
why was this password on a piece of leather you have stretched over a frame? You don't want to know.
Skin grafts.
Oh, fuck.
That's skin grafts.
Skin grafts. All right. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on peer decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. And that's all I've really got for tonight. Anybody have anything before I play the Pac-Man sound?
I think Pac-Man may be dead.